This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to this Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 86 and it's the 19th of October and it's currently 18 minutes past six in the UK. We're here today on this podcast. I've got my colleague with me, Wheelie Dealer. He's at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. My name's obviously Peter Higgins. You can find me at Conkers3 on Twitter. And today we've got a very good guest. We've got Michael T. And you can find Michael at Michael5149281. Hello, Michael. How you doing, mate?
Hello. Nice to see you. Nice to
very
come
welcome,
on.
Sir. We've got Wheelie with us. How you doing, Wheelie?
Yeah, I'm getting there, mate. I'm trying to battle through my niggles, but I'm quite positive that it will improve.
Cool. Now, the reason I've got Michael on here today, ladies and gents, is because Michael and I spoke many, many years ago at a Mellow event. And that's the first time I met him. We had a bit of a chat. And I've been keeping an eye on him ever since, just to find out and to ensure that he's a good egg. And I can confirm he's a good egg. It's the reason why he's on here. So we're going to have a chat in depth with Michael going forward. We're going to find out how long he's been investing, what sort of investor he is, what sort of things he's learned, what sort of insights he can share regarding his journey, and much, much more. But before we do all of that, we're going to talk about the markets a little bit. Michael, please feel free to chime in where you want to. When we were last here, folks, Wheelie and I were having a conversation about where the markets were going. And I was saying, I'm very concerned still. I'm very, very cautious. Wheelie was getting a little bit bullish, but also a bit cautious. And I was saying, really, we need to watch and be cautious of the fact that 7,000 is now resistance. And that was 2 weeks ago. And we've barely been above that since then. The most significant thing of all things, well, we've had loads of significant things happen, to be fair. I think really our political commentator will have lots to say about this trust and the all kind of stuff that's been going on. A bit more going forward. But I want to focus more so, really, on the FTSE being on Thursday, CPI Thursday, it was called, wasn't it? It was last Thursday. And we opened up really, really well. Everyone was being positive about the markets on last Thursday. And we had an intraday high of 6,872. CPI kicked off. Wasn't good numbers. Markets completely sank. We're up from 1% in the morning to down 1% in the afternoon after 2 o'clock. So we had a low of 6,707, yeah, around just after 2 p.m. on Thursday. And then we actually rallied in the late afternoon. I think the PP team in the US came out and rescued the markets after the Dow Jones and everything else sank in America. And we ended up on Thursday close, and the Yanks, the American markets, popped 2%+ last Thursday, and the FTSE closed at 6,850. Obviously, then we had the noise. Kwasi came back from his jaunt, got into the taxi, found out via social media that he'd been sacked. Bless him. And Friday, the markets rallied because he'd gone and maybe something was going to change. Then we had Jeremy Hunt coming into office. Lots of people use a different surname for Jeremy, but please keep it clean, ladies and gents. And Friday, the markets are reasonably strong. Monday, more volatility, markets up. And actually, Monday, the markets popped above Monday, Tuesday. Markets popped, Tuesday was, of this week, we're on Wednesday today, popped just above 7,000 very, very briefly. And today we've closed at 6.9, 6.8, I think, or there or thereabouts, Pete.
I've got 6.924 showing on.
6.924 was where we closed, sorry. The intraday high was 6.968, sorry. So we're still sitting there below 7,000. 7,000 is now a line in the sand that if we're going to see any strength, we need to get above that and stay above that for at least a week. It keeps going up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. So we've got resistance at 7,000 and about 25. We've got support, which is that low of last Thursday at 6,707. If we breach at any point 6,007, I'm going to get this right, 6,700, we're in trouble, people, again. Yeah, so we've got to watch and see what people do. Pete, go.
Looking at the chart, as you say, that 6,707 is extremely important. It's quite a bit of support, about 6.5. So, you know,
we don't want to go there.
Well, you know, we've got to think about the possibility. It is possible. I mean, my hope and leaning is more towards that 6707 holding for now. It really depends on US earnings season, depends on Putin, depends on what on earth happens with whatever's going on with this government, because today has been utterly bonkers. There was trust lost a trusted advisor at number 10 earlier this morning. Most people have forgotten about that. And then this afternoon, Suella Braverman has to go because she put out a market sensitive piece of information on a private phone to another MP. And from what I can tell, the MP then grassed her up. So it's all really confusing. But you just,
it's never bad. Michael, have you been tracking any of this politics? Or you're like, nah, I'm not interested. What's your take on it all?
I do watch it. I find it very interesting. I think it's appalling, actually. I can't remember such a rubbish government. I can't. Trust began, she seemed to want to behave like Margaret Thatcher, the lady's not for turning. And the opposite's happened, basically. She's got no power. Hunt's clearly in charge. She needs to go. That's it. No one's going to listen to anything she says. That's my opinion. And today's made it worse.
Okay. So Pete's got lots of views on this. You know, he's a political commentator on FinTwit at the moment. For us FinTwitters and people that are in finance and looking to buy stocks and shares as private investors. But this is the question I've got for everybody. Everyone's saying, oh, she's got to go. Now, the Tory members have voted for, right, Theresa May. We need to get her in. Get her in. She's the best one. Get rid of her. Get rid of her. Get rid of her, right? Put Boris in. Boris is the best one. Everyone, hallelujah, hallelujah. Get rid of him, right? Now, through their various voting mechanisms, they've chosen Liz Truss. And within a month, they're saying, get rid of her, get rid of her, get rid of her. So who is it going to be next? Is it going to be Mordaunt? I can never pronounce her name. Penny Mordaunt, if that's the right name. Is it going to be Boris coming back? Is it going to be Rishi Sunak coming back? You know, who's it going to be? It's just, you know, they're talking about, what's he called? Some chap with Wallace that no one's ever heard of.
Ben Wallace, yeah.
So it's like, who are you going to choose? Who would you choose, Michael?
Oh, you're asking me a direct question?
Direct question. None of the above. Who would you choose?
Okay, so Boris is not coming back right now, in my opinion. This is my opinion. I think Hunt's in charge now, and he sounds like the grown-up in the room. And it seems to me like Truss has got no choice but to do this. Otherwise, she wouldn't agree to it. I actually quite like Ben Wallace, but whether he's experienced enough and wants to do it, I don't know. I always thought Rishi was a much better option than Truss. There you go.
Fair enough. Pete, go. You've got the floor, mate. Go for it.
Well, I'll tell
not
you
too
what,
long. Not too long on this. Not half an hour.
The Ben Wallace one is interesting because apparently he nearly resigned at the weekend. So... he was concerned that he wasn't going to get his 3% of GDP for defence. I mean, I think one of the big factors, what's really keeping Truss in is is probably three things. First thing is the country needs stability. The markets need stability. To call another leader now, another leadership contest now, however short, to have another leader now, it would be very difficult to avoid a general election. Having the uncertainty and the nonsense of a general election for another flipping 3 months. I mean, who was it? Brenda in Bristol? Not another one. I mean, she, poor old Brenda will lose her fruit, mate. She absolutely lose it. And I mean, the other thing, so the markets wouldn't like that instability. So I think in a way they need to keep it like it is. God, at least for a few months. I think the other problem, they can't agree on who will take over from Truss. Then you have the problem that the Tory party rules say she's got to have a year. Yeah, they can change it. But Sir Graham Brady, head of the 1922, says he'll only think about changing it when he's got over half the MPs have put in letters, you know, which is a big ask. So, and of course, the other problem you've got is that the Tory MPs know that with their votes, so the vote share in the polls so horrendous at the moment, none of them want to do a general election now. It'd be wipeout, total wipeout.
Pete, so, they don't even want to do a local election because they know they're going to get wiped out there.
Yeah.
And it's a local election probably going to come before a general election. They'll get wiped out.
May the 5th next year is the locals. Perhaps that's when Truss gets moved on. Who knows? But the main thing is trying to get stability because it's been such an absolute dog's breakfast, hasn't it? I mean, it's been appalling. But I can't see the Tories winning unless there's a miracle. And when you think, what sort of miracle would it need? I think the only miracle that would work is Truss assassinating Putin. That's about the only thing.
You can't say that on here, man. Come on.
No, honestly, you know, it's like, That's the order of magnitude of the absolute.
Don't keep saying things like that on here, please.
It'll get us in trouble. Something that significant to for Truss to be seen as someone useful. I just can't see. I can't see Truss achieving anything that's going to get the popularity of the Tories back. I think they're busted flush now.
Let me just stop you there, Michael. Welcome to the madhouse. I'm really sorry. This is what I have to put up with every single podcast. Let me just read this for you both, right? This is someone talking about Liz Truss. And this someone is called Tim Farron, right? And he's a former leader of the Lib Dems. And he actually tweeted this. His Twitter account wasn't hacked. This is what he wrote. Honestly, when we sent her in undercover, we never thought it would work this well. As we celebrate / mourn today 100 years since the last Liberal Prime Minister. Agent Liz is ensuring that the Conservatives not get their opportunity to have a century of power. They're going to have a century out of power, is what he tweeted. So that's how bad it is that another politician, a senior politician, is tweeting that you've got Agent Orange Liz basically ruining the Conservative Party, and that's serious. Right, enough of the comedy. Go, Michael, go on.
Okay, so I think she is going to go. I don't think it's going to be that long. She just can't stay. This is my opinion. I've never seen anything like it. When I said this government, I meant Truss and this bit just now. And I actually tweeted only two little tweets. Not long now, only two prime ministers till Christmas.
I think you could be right. And this is a scary thing. You know, we were, say, the paragon of virtue, but we were on that sort of standard bearer of politics around the globe. You know, even after Margaret Thatcher, we had a certain standing. Now we've got other countries going, what's going on over there? It's crazy. It's mad. It's silly. You know, how can you have a Chancellor of Exchequer that's been in the job for a month? How can you have a Prime Minister in the job for a month and be changing it or thinking about changing it, her or him again? You know, how can you kick one person out and bring them back in again? It's like football managers, you know, you're going to have kids playing FIFA. Instead of playing FIFA, they're going to play number 10. You know, it's madness. Let's play Parliament. You know, it's just crazy. You know, and that's how embarrassing it is, Michael. You know, and you've got people now on Twitter, diehard Tory voter, saying, "I'm not voting Tory again. I can't vote for that government again. I can't vote for them and put them in government again." That's how stark it is, actually physically saying that, you know, because we know how politics, how tribal it is. It's a bit like, you know, any sort of sport. People are like fixed on their mindset regarding certain things. Tory diehards and Labour diehards, never going to change. Now people are saying, not going to vote for him again. It's just shocking. Michael, let's talk about you, mate. Enough of the other stuff. Let's talk about you.
I'm not as interesting as that, I'm sure.
Oh, I tell you what, mate. We'll make sure you are. Let's just get some flavour, right? So we've got Michael T. Ladies and gents, you can find him on Twitter at Michael514928. Now, Michael and I have spoken many, many times in the past on Twitter, and I spoke to him and interviewed him a little while back at one of the Mellow events. Michael's been investing since late 1990s, and essentially is a small cap, micro cap investor, not a trader. We know everyone's turning to traders, and he tends to buy companies which have got an international exposure. And he tends to be a buy and hold investor. So he's long term, buys things for the long term. And he does his investing via his ISA. And he also invests and makes investment for his son via the junior ISA. So, Michael, I want to talk a little bit about the start regarding investing for you, why you started, how you started. You know, some people start with a tiny little acorn and grow it a little bit incrementally until they get to a point where they've got enough wealth there, you can, you know, lump a full ISA in each year, and some people haven't. So how did you start?
Well, I've always been interested in numbers, and I always liked earning a bit of money for myself. You know, I had a paper round, bob a job, I don't know, all the time.
All the way back to a paper round, mate.
No, but these things are important. They are. They all matter. And I mean, my dad had some shares. And so I knew from my teenage years, I'd seen the power of compounding. And he always said, just leave it alone. Don't touch it. And he didn't buy the shares. He had a stockbroker who did that. And but he didn't know why the shares went up and down. He just knew they did. And I wanted to find out. That's really where it all began. And
Michael, how old were you then?
What, when I did with my paper round?
Yeah, you were pretty young, weren't you? Is my point.
I wasn't investing when I did the paper round.
Yeah.
But I knew about stocks and shares as a teenager. And I mean, I've always found it interesting, but, you know, I started investing late 90s. That's when I'd say I started getting more, you know, my hobby was more than just like, I was getting into it, you know, and I remember owning some shares in, what was it called, it was a telecoms company, Cable and Wireless, in that time, and they went crazy, and all that stuff went up, and I watched it. I didn't know when to buy and sell. I'm not, you know, I just started getting a flavour of how crazy and irrational the markets can be, because obviously, what a company does is important, what's under the bonnet and who runs it. But sentiment is massive, isn't it? It's such a massive thing in every direction. I know, I've just been taking it on sucking it in. And, you know, I just find it massively interesting. Even when it goes wrong, I find that interesting. You know, obviously, it's harder than when it goes right. It's nice when it goes right. Everything is rather easy. When it goes wrong, it seems harder. But I've learned in life, not just with investing, but all sorts of things, it matters most how you cope when it goes wrong, how you react. And it's the same for investing, isn't it?
Absolutely. You've said, a couple of things you've said there I want to go back on. You said about the sentiment thing, and the sentiment is massive. You see the sentiment at the moment. It's so bearish, so negative. Pete and I have been called out on Twitter for being quite bearish and negative of late. But, you know, you get this thing on Twitter where in a bullish market, everyone's bullish and the sentiment is uber bullish and things get overpriced. And then when the market cools, and doesn't necessarily have to get bearish or negative, the market just cools, the valuations that were frothy and going sky high slowly come back to norms. And unfortunately, what's happened now, we've gone from almost bullish last year, you know, middle of last year up till the summer of last year, everyone's uber bullish about various variety of different stocks. And they went to the position of being overpriced almost. There's a lot of them sitting at lofty premiums. You know, investment funds and trusts and so on and so forth were sitting at 30, 40, 50% premium. Some REITs were anyway. And now they're at discount within 6 months, 12 months. Yeah. And then you said something about the other side of it, about the good and the bad of it, when markets are going well and markets aren't doing so well, and how to deal with them both almost the same. I think that's really, really important, because there's a really strange thing about all investors, right? When we gain a win and we gain a pound or whatever it is, whatever value you want to put on it, a percentage, which is a win, we take it and go, yeah, that's great. However, when we take the same loss or impact by the same percentage loss, it impacts us even greater. So we don't take the parity of a 10%, 50% win the same as we take a 10% or a 50% loss. We take the loss twice as hard as we go and cheer ourselves or congratulate ourselves for that same gain. It's bizarre, but it's just the way that we're built. You know what I mean? So, yeah, so it's really, really interesting, I think, about managing our psychology, which is why I talk about that a lot. Sorry, Pete, go.
Michael, question for you. You know, just lately, in the last 2 weeks, we've had some pretty unpleasant markets, yeah? How have you coped with the psychology of that and trying to keep yourself just about sane, sort of thing?
I'm probably not the best person to ask this question at the moment.
Well, we all go through it.
I'll tell you why. I've had worse moments, to be honest, than this. I think I'm holding up better than most at the moment. I'm still got some, you know, I am down, but I'm not much down here today, which is, so I'm feeling kind of pleased compared to how I might be feeling. You know, I'm not, if you're one of these large multinational companies, your shares will move down with the sentiment and with the index. If you're in the small companies, they don't move in the same way. It's not the same.
Can I just point out there, Michael, that knowing you pretty well, you tend to buy small quality companies. It's really important to get that quality word in, because I think you'll find with a lot of the lower quality small stuff, it's all just tanked atrociously. So I think there's a big difference there.
I do try and avoid certain stocks, certain sectors, certain situations, because to my mind, they are a hazard, and I avoid them. If you want to buy and hold, buying cyclical companies, for example, doesn't work, does it? Because they go up and down. That's why they're called cyclical. There's a lot of sectors. I avoid any binary outcomes. I don't buy resource companies. I don't buy biotech companies. I don't buy companies with a lot of debt. I learned after Brexit, don't buy just UK-facing companies unless there's a special reason. Mm-hmm. So all my companies have global earnings. They're all very small, the companies I have as well. It means there's less to learn. So you can understand them a bit more easily, because I'm not pretending to be the cleverest person that ever walked on the planet. And so I kind of remove a lot of sectors of the market before I begin. And then what I'm looking at is smaller. And I like to be able to speak to management. So if a management are approachable, that's good. I know you have to be careful. And obviously things I do go wrong as well. When management aren't approachable, it's a bit of a red flag for me, to be honest. Why not? Especially if it's a small company. They want you to find out about them and see if you like them. And a bit of luck, obviously. We all need a bit of luck.
We all do.
Michael, we make our luck.
we can make our life. I think the beauty of what you just said there about reducing your universe of stocks is really, really important. You know, and Pete touched on the fact that you're looking for quality stocks, so you're looking to hold them for a long time. And then you've touched on actually approaching the management, speaking to the management, trying to find out, you know, what is the strategy. You're not looking for any inside information, you're looking for a strategy and goals and ambitions and all the rest of it, you know, because you want to know, is this company going to be around for 3 or 4 or 5 years? Are they going to actually have a chance of achieving what they're trying to achieve? That's what you're trying to get. And you want to be able to think, you know what, I'm investing here in October 2022, and I want to be able to hold this stock for October 2025 or beyond. I don't want to be going in and out, in and out, in and out. You know, I'm not a trader. I just want to buy and hold for the next 3 years. So that's what you want. The thing I will ask you, though, Michael, is that with regards to some of these small cap companies, and they have AGMs, they have hybrid sort of events where you can go and see them and speak to them. Have you ever invested in the company, yeah, prior to actually being able to speak with the management properly, and then you've met the company at an AGM or an event, and you've then gone, I'm out?
All options.
So it has happened.
I'm an investor. I've gone through all. I don't expect that every single thing I do is going to work out. And as soon as I realise I don't like it, I sell it. You know, I had one recently that I liked a lot, and I've now sold it because it wasn't, they didn't do what they said, and management were very unapproachable.
Michael,
I should say that now, should I?
Yeah, you tell us.
Okay, I just want to make sure I'm not doing it wrong.
No, you're doing a good job, mate. You're doing well.
I own shares in a company called Electron Technology. I think, Peter, you had those as well, didn't you?
Originally, they're Electron. They're now called Check It. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were a conglomerate of several companies. And one of the companies, I think there were three in at the time, called Electron. I'm not sure. They did something to do with batteries. And they did terribly well. And they sold the company with the battery company. And the shareholders did very well out of it, got lots of money back, also kept a rump. And I kept faith with this company. It became Check It, and I carry on keeping faith with it. And I did. And then the chap running it, Keith Daly, he went upstairs and brought in a new CEO. And I still kept faith. I'm generally positive about things, but I wanted to speak to him. I went to a capital markets day, and I did speak to him a very short time, but I wanted to speak to him again after that. And it proved incredibly difficult. And at the capital markets day, they were talking about land grab, and they made a big raise to try and, you know, get the market. And it sounded very good. It sounded like it worked well in this type of difficult environment. And the land grab didn't materialize, the revenue didn't come. And now they're talking about looking at profitability, and I'm out.
You've nailed it there. You know, I kept the rump. I think I bought it at nine pence and tender at 63, or if I remember it rightly, or something like that. And I kept the rump of it because they had loads of cash. And I was like, they're going to use this cash, do what they need to do, strategy, grow sales, and then this little rump will end up growing, you know, exponentially over the next 2 or 3 years. All that cash is just slowly just being trickled away, and the share price has just gone like that. And I'm sitting there going, should I have got rid of it? You know, is it too late now? And I'm sitting there going, at some point or other, the next bit of news, I think, could be quite pivotal. And between now and December, they come out with something, you go, all right, they've finally got a grasp of things now. They're going to sort stuff out. It seems like a year's just been wasted when they could have been taken advantage. I agree with you, Michael. So I've still got my tiny little rump bit of what is now EKT. CKT, Check It. And I'm waiting to see what they do. But you can see two doors behind me. They're nearly going through that door, mate, because it's about execution. You've got the money. You've got the technology, you've got everything there. Execute. They haven't done it yet, but yeah, it's a great example.
So the tech is definitely very good. I spoke to the tech guys; they were great. They were really passionate. And they seem to really good. I think it's just such a difficult market. There are so many players in it. And we all have our different ways of investing. For me, the fact they didn't do what they said and they're unapproachable, you know, and I'm in and I back companies properly until I'm not, and then I'm out. That seems to be how it works. So it could, you know, they could start winning some contracts and do very well, but I've done my time now.
You've got to remain independent, Michael. This is what I keep saying on Twitter. Do your analysis, follow your own strategy, forget about all what everyone else is saying and the noise, focus on your portfolio and your stocks. And then when you've made your mind up that you want to buy more, buy more. When you've made your mind up you want to sell, sell. Ignore all the noise. People are so focused on what everyone else is doing. Oh, X and Y and Z is buying this and buying that. And everyone's ramping that stock. Everyone's talking about it on that platform and that platform. Therefore, I've got to buy it. No. Don't fall for fear of missing out. Don't fall for all the noise about, oh, that person's got loads of followers and he knows what he's doing. Absolute nonsense. Seen it just today. I'm going to give you an example of something what's happened today regarding one of the stocks. Yeah, absolutely got smashed to smithereens.
Michael, I got a couple of quick questions. First one, how many stocks do you tend to hold? What's the number of stocks in your portfolio?
It's now the lowest it's ever been. I came to Mello first in 2018. I had 20 to 25 stocks at that point, and I reduced to that. I'm now down to 11 or 12. The reason I've come down, I kept trying to open a new position in something else and getting disappointed. And I feel more confident in the companies that I own. So that seems to be how I've got, it's sort of an organic thing. It's what, not.
What happened with the ones that you were what? Were you just unable to buy the volume you wanted?
No, it wasn't to do with anything like that. It was to do with that I wasn't comfortable with them. It's not about volume. I'm not worried about liquidity. Well, I'm more worried than I was. If I really like it, I'm okay. I'm not trying to sell it, am I? I'm hoping it's going to do well and, you know, things are going to move up.
So you're saying that you're very, very strict about what comes into your portfolio?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay, next question. I remember you and me were down the boozer some time ago now.
What do you mean?
I saw you on the ale. No, we were down the boozer and we got onto the subject of Shagger. Remember Shagger?
You don't talk about that on here.
Shagger, it's like, what?
He's talking about Shanta Gold.
This is Shanta Gold, Twin Peaks
investment. You are an or what?
Whatever channel you're listening to.
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear your question. Say it again.
Are you still in it or what?
No.
And
thank you.
And today they had takeover interest.
So I did have two gold mining companies, which were producers, not explorers, but for an inflation hedge, not because I wanted the resource element of it. And I thought they were quite well run. I'm no expert by any means. But about a year ago, I sold out of them both. If we're getting rising interest rates, that's not going to be good for gold. And that's proven to be the case because gold provides no income. So if you want to hold gold, you know, it's you're losing.
Well, if you've got physical gold, it's costing you money because you have to pay for the securities and whatever. Yeah,
but a bit like Peter, I'm not very good at resources. I realize I know my limits. When I know something I'm not good at, I don't do that. I try and stick to what I'm good at. I've got a lot of little simple things like that. I think life's very complicated. So if you have simple rules that you go by, do what you're good at, avoid this. It makes life more simple. You can make investing very difficult if you want to, but I don't find that makes the returns better. And I'm not afraid to say that one didn't work out and sell it.
Do you write your? Have you written your rules down? Have you got like a set of written rules like that?
I haven't. No, I haven't.
Okay.
Maybe I should.
Well, it's up to you, mate. I mean, it's your you're obviously so practiced in your process and your methods and your approach that you probably don't need to write them down because you've just got it very, very much sussed in your head, you know?
I think I should talk to myself. So I tell myself the rule. I actually think I do that. It makes it more simple. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It sits in your mind then.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
I wanted to go back, Michael. You said that you currently got about the least number of stocks that you've got in your portfolio for a while. You're around a dozen or thereabouts. So within that portfolio, there are some stocks which you've had for a little while. Can you give an example of one that's weathered the storm for you and you've kept possibly the longest and the reasons why you've got that particular stock, name the name of it, and what it is about that one that it's still sitting there strong in your portfolio and still quite keen on it?
Well, I'm keen on all the stocks I own, number one.
Of course, but keenest then.
I am keen on all of them.
So which one's been in the longest?
It's a hard question to answer because valuation comes
Wait, Pete.
I know which stock he's talking about. I reckon it's LOAD because you've done brilliant on that.
Well, I'm really pleased with that one. But that one's... I'm a bit... the one I've held for longest that I'm very excited about that hasn't actually really done a lot, I'll tell you about that one. So that one is called Bango.
Bango,
yeah. And Pete also holds Bango. And I've held Bango for 6 years.
Wow, okay.
And it hasn't really done a lot in 6 years. Gone up a bit, down a bit. But a lot has come on under the bonnet. It looks very highly rated, but it's very exciting. And it's actually very complicated to understand. I know that's not normally what we private investors want to hear. I want to have a simple idea and understand it easily. It's more complicated. So initially it was a DCB, a direct carrier billing company. So you pay for stuff on your mobile phone bill other than your actual mobile phone. That is what DCB is. And it's all the rage in South Korea and Japan, and it's only starting to come through in the West and so on, but it's going on all over the world. Their revenue has gone up 42% CAGR since 2016. So they are growing fast. Now, more recently, they've started two new looking to get revenue in two new areas. One of them is where they're trying to monetize the data they get from the payments. So all the payment data they get, they anonymize it and they sell it in segments to app developers. And because it's anonymized and it's allowed, and because it's data of people who pay for stuff, which means if an app developer uses that, the likelihood of a sale is higher. Much higher than if it was just some data.
Yeah.
And the second thing they've done, which is clever, they've got this platform paid for. They've created an environment called the Bango ecosystem where, they brought a lot of telecoms companies in. So they've recently brought in Verizon in the USA and also T-Mobile USA. So that's more than half the USA market. With their technology, you can bundle subscriptions and get anything you want. And Bango's in the ecosystem. There's Netflix, there's Microsoft, there's Amazon, there's all sorts of other companies. This revenue hasn't actually yet hit Bango, but it's all signed up and coming. It's not in the numbers. There's a lot I can say, but I'm trying to make it shorter and understand.
No, that's a really good little synopsis. I know Pete's had it. How long have you had it, Pete? How long have you had Bango?
Do you know what? I've had it on and off because I held them probably 12 years ago or something, and they were a very, I don't know, they always seemed a bit amateurish back then, but I did like what was going on. I held that for a while. I think I did all right on it, then I sold it. but I always kept an eye on them. And it's probably in the last sort of like 2-3 years that I bought into them again. And I'm very happy with how things are going. Me and Michael talk a lot about them. And yeah, I, as Michael says, I think there's really good potential. So I'm very, very happy holding BGO.
I think in the past when I've looked at them, what I've always liked is the CEO, and his name escapes me at the minute.
Ray.
He's always been
Ray Anderson.
Ray Anderson. Okay. He's always been one of those sort of innovative guys on the cusp of almost everything. He knows what's going on in his universe, you know, and almost at the forefront of most things in that space. You know, for a very small company, he's one of the UK's better technologists, if you want to give him a name, a title. So you've got a great CEO, a great culture of growth, and he's been persistent at, we're going to make this, you know, and the surviving in amongst all of that massive, massive industry in the US and still winning contracts. So what's not to like, you know? But like you say, you want the share price to match the revenue growth, Michael, wouldn't you?
So, I mean, there's a couple of things I'd add. I mean, they're not lowly rated in shares, but it's a very high growth company. So their margins are 95%. The platform's paid for. Obviously, they have to do a bit of work on it, but basically they paid for the platform. These three revenue streams I explained are all growing exponentially, and they all feed into each other. So if they do more payments, they get more data for the data monetization. And, you know, if they get more subscription bundling, they're getting recurring revenue. It all feeds into itself. And then the idea is it attracts more and more companies to the system. They've signed two big contracts recently. One is, well, they didn't say who it is, but the rumours are that it's Apple. And again, this hasn't actually started hitting the revenue line yet. And the other thing that they've recently done is they made a massive acquisition. So their end user spend was $2 billion last year. That's the amount of take that amount they take a small percentage of the end user spend as revenue. So they did $2 billion of end user spend last year, and they just bought, $4 million. Sorry, I've got that wrong. And they just bought another company in Japan, which is the largest DCB direct carrier billing area in the world. They bought the largest company called, it's quite complicated.
It's NTT Docomo, isn't it?
Yeah, so they bought NTT Digital, which is the direct carrier, which is the...
That's right, the DCB part of NTT. NTT is the big, what used to be, well, I'm not sure if it still is, the monopolistic telco operator like British Telecom used to be for the UK. So NTT is absolutely massive. And they basically bought the sort of mobile arm of NTT, their DCB carrier billing business.
And they also are going to do all their carrier billing for NTT as well.
Yeah.
But effectively doubling their end user spend by this acquisition. And they've been working on this acquisition for 8 years.
That's really, really good. I think the interesting thing, Michael, is that you have persisted, Wheelie's persisted with it, and the patience at some point will be out. And I think this is the sort of thing when something is consolidated for a long time and people go, it's going to get nowhere. And sometimes that patience works in the favor of the long-term investors, because when all of those revenues start going to the bottom line, all that work's done, all that investment's done, all that reinvestment's done, all that R&D's done, the patience of waiting 8 years to purchase, you know, an ideal component for growth, when it drops and everyone goes, well, how comes I didn't know about this company? Been sitting there in plain sight for 6 years, you know, and longer. So, yeah, I wish you both good luck with that one.
Michael, can I ask you a question about another stock that I think you hold, although you may not now, but you can tell us what the situation is? That is Cambridge Cognition, COG. I noticed today they'd won another contract. My concern with COG is that the rating, you look at the forward PE, it's just absolutely bonkers. What's your thought on COG and what's your you know, expectations, etc.?
Yes, I do still own it. I've owned it for quite a while. I bought it when it was in the dumps. I thought it'd been beaten up massively, far more than it should have been. It was a Simon Thompson stock. And then I think it had one contract that was delayed and lost another contract. And he dumped it. And if Simon Thompson dumps something, because they're small, illiquid companies, they literally go down, far down. And often they get overdone. Anyway, I watched this company. I did own it for a little while when it before that. And then I just thought, oh, I don't know. Anyway, I'd been watching it for a couple of years. And I just couldn't really understand how it was worth, I don't know, well over £2. And then it was went to under 20p. And it had exciting stuff. It's a life science company. It's going to help, you know, it tries to help people with brain, it measures brain cognition, brain health. And to me, that's potentially a massive growth area. I like to invest in companies where there are big sector tailwinds. It's like going up the up escalator, not up the down escalator. I like these simple things. I don't know, these. That's how I think about stuff. But they did a placing, so they had enough cash, and the directors took part in a placing, and then contracts started coming in. So that's where I began. And it's always a little bit of a punt when you do that. Of course, there's some, you need a bit of luck in everything, but I thought a lot of things were pointing in the right direction. And it went incredibly well. I think it's my most successful investment. One thing I have learned since I came to Mello and all these people, because I invested a long time on my own. So I only came to Mello in 2018 and all the, you know, you two and this crowd of investors is averaging up. So I've averaged up in Cambridge Cognition. So I carried on buying it up to about 50p. It went up to £1.80. Can you believe that?
Brilliant. Well done.
I didn't sell any. I've still got it. We're around £1.20 now. It did a little acquisition last week. It's got the biggest order book it's ever had.
It's got cash, hasn't it, I think?
It's got a quarter of 25% of the market cap is cash.
That's good.
It's now well run. I'm not selling it. I agree it's on a high rating, but there's a lot of potential.
Yeah.
Seems to be run sensibly. And it's not, you know, if it loses a contract, it's not the end of the world. It hasn't lost a big contract for ages. I'm sure, it, you know, some small ones. We don't know about the little ones, but I think they'll have to announce if they lost a big contract.
That's really good, mate. Congratulations to that. We're going to have a little break here, Mike. I'm just going to ask Pete to share with us the charity stuff that he's been, well, we've been raising money for Backup Trust, and just give you a break because I'm conscious that you've been talking for a little while. So, Pete, just tell us about the Backup Trust, who's donated, what the total is at the moment.
Yeah,
and I mean, thank everybody that's been supporting us for that charity. Thank you all for that.
Every year we like to bring a charity to the fore, you know, for our listeners who can, you know, can help make a contribution if they so wish. However small, it all helps, you know. And charities are really struggling at the moment. Everyone's struggling, aren't they? It's such a difficult time. So the charity we've gone for this year is one I know very well. It's the Backup Trust. They help people with spinal injuries. I'm spinally injured myself. I'm paralyzed at chest level. So I'm paraplegic. And they do great work to help people who are wheelchair users. And they do a lot of work around the mental side and the sort of the psychological side of you know, a life-changing injury or condition or whatever caused people to get their paralysis. So they do a lot of really good work. you know, they do a lot of things like outward bound courses, like skiing and whatever. They do things like mentoring, which is really good, and helping people get back to work, and a lot of stuff with kids and whatever. So it's a really, really good charity. So we've been helping them out, and all our listeners have been fantastically generous, which is brilliant. I'll tell you the total in a minute, but I'm going to read out some comments and donations from a while back that I might have mentioned on a previous podcast, but that, you know, it just want to bring them to the fore. So Nigel Donati, hello Nigel, he gave us a nice little contribution. I love your banter, chaps, and always learn a lot from your podcast. I'm on Twitter as Don't Tell Him Pike, but I don't really use it very much. Great calls, and I'll be donating again. Cheers, Nigel. Thanks, mate. Brilliant.
Nice one, Nigel.
Viral Shah, he gave us a donation. Nice little donation there. Great going, gents. Pete at Wheelie Dealer, thanks for explaining about what the charity does. Keep doing what you are doing best. Podcastic. I love that. Podcast. I've not read that one out, so thanks, Viral. I love that, mate. No. What is it? Podcastic and educating numbots, whatever a numbot is. So I'm struggling now. Podcastic and educating numbots like me. Well, mate, you're no numbot, I can tell you that, whatever a numbot is. And then someone I know well, Neil, a child of the 70s. Thanks again for the great podcast. I'm very happy to donate to this great cause. Brilliant. Cheers, Neil. And then looking at the latest total, we're up to so far this year, and we've still got a few months to go in 2022. We're up to £2,399. 57 people have donated. So thank you, everyone. And the rest of you, if you can get your fingers out and get donating, I'll tell you how to do that. Basically, if you go to my Wheelie Dealer 2 website, so www.wheeliedealer2.weebly.com, if you go on there, go to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast page, and at the top of that there's a link that takes you to the Just Giving charity. I'll tell you a bit more about that, but I just want to say thanks to Roger Green. Really nice big donation. Thank you very much, Rod. Thanks for all your good work. Thanks for all your work on the podcast, and well done in selecting such a good charity. I'm pleased that I can donate to support the Backup Trust. Keep up the good work. Fantastic. Thanks, mate. In terms of the Just Giving page, it's www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Twin Peaks.
We also have the links on Wheelie's website, and the first tweet that usually goes out has got a link to my website, which has got all the different links towards that Just Giving page as well. So thank you all again for your support. And if you can make a donation anytime between now and Christmas, that'd be absolutely fantastic, because we're trying to raise as much as we possibly can for the charity. Now, thank you ever so much. I want to talk about a stock today that's troubled me, because it's a stock that I saw a lot of people cheerleading earlier on in the year and continued throughout the summer because it was an energy-related play. And today it just got absolutely walloped. And I've not really had a chance to acknowledge, so apologies. Lots of people sent me DMs to say, what's going on here? And what should I do? And so on and so forth. So I'm not where I normally would be. So I've not had time in front of the computers that much today. But the stock in question is IOG PLC. The ticker is IOG. And this is a stock going back to last summer, and this summer was lots of people were championing this stock. It's in the sort of sector that Michael T and I don't really go that often very close to, which is an oiler stock. But obviously with oil prices being the way they were, and certain stocks that were oil related, everyone thought all of these were going to go to the moon. Some of them have, but there's not many stocks as solid as BP or Shell. And today, I'm not sure where it finished, but at one stage today, the shares were down 55%. They've gone down significantly since their year-to-day high, and basically was downgraded production guidance as well as suspended amidst a fluid loss problem. It's a North Sea oil firm, and basically said that their Southwark A1 well has been securely suspended, which, you know, it's just going to be it's a massive, massive loss. And I don't think anybody was expecting that. And some of the people that were cheerleading that particular stock have disappeared with no explanation as to whether they still hold that stock or whether they sold it previously. It's just tumbleweed, as my daughter would call it. And this goes back to what I keep saying to anyone that will listen, is to, you know, just like Michael's on here. What did he do? He researches his own stock. He's not led by Simon Thompson. He's not led by anyone on Twitter. He researches his own stock. He tries to speak to the management, find out a bit more about it. Doesn't wait for one, two, or three, or four people on Twitter to say, this is going to go to the moon. This is the stock to buy, Michael. You must buy it. Slipping into his DMs and saying, oh, what do you think of this, Michael? I think it's great. You should buy it. Just avoid those people, yeah, that are trying to champion a stock, trying to tell you what to buy, trying to encourage you to buy, because it's all about sentiment. They're trying to encourage sentiment. They're trying to create a cult of that stock or this stock and da 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 da. And in the bear market, with an illiquid stock, you can do amazing by ramping the stock. But the minute that there's bad news, 55, 60%, I'm not sure where it finished today. Pete, where did it finish today? Can you tell me? You got your little phone up.
I'll tell you, mate. I'll tell you.
So the stock was down significantly this morning, 55%. I don't know where it finished, but it's a long way from where the share price 52-week high was. So again, word of caution, please, 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 take your time to have your own judgment, make your own judgment, invest in stocks. Don't follow anybody into any stock whatsoever.
Down 57% at 8p, and it's broken the 3-year low on my chart, which obviously isn't very nice.
It was a 52-week high, Pete. You said it was 8-point-something p. What was the 52-week high price?
The 52-week high was about 45p.
45p to 8p in a heartbeat.
Ouch.
Yeah. So my condolences to anybody that got in there, did their own research, because some of you did. If you did your own research and unfortunately this well's, you know, caused this sort of damage, then it's just one of these things regarding oil stocks. They're not necessarily binary, but you're looking at each well striking. And if it doesn't strike or something goes wrong, the share price invariably gets hammered.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the TWINPEETS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Right, Pete, have you got a stock you want to share, mate? I'm conscious of the time. Yeah. So let's just crack on and share at least a couple to people.
I'll do a couple of quick ones. I noticed some IPOs coming up. One was called World Chess, and I don't know, it just struck me as I doubt it's going to be a great stock. So that's one that I wouldn't get particularly excited about.
This is chess. This is playing of chess, isn't it, Pete? Not the other war chest.
No, it's not.
I'm trying to keep it clean, Michael. I could have said something else.
No, I think there is a Russian.
The world of chess, as in the game of chess.
I think there's a Russian link. So when you said war,
No. Don't not go there. Oh, please.
Anyway, We are so going to get whacked. Right. The other one that might be, I mean, obviously, what we've learned this year is that IPOs that listed in the last couple of years have generally been an absolute flipping nightmare and have been terrible. So generally speaking, with IPOs, you've got to be off the scale careful. Anyway, this is one that maybe in time it could be interesting. I think it is called Sonodo, S-O-N-O-D-O, but I might be wrong, Sonodo Holdings, and it's a new chip-related IPO. Yeah, it does chip, not potato chips, but like you know, microchips.
Semiconductors, kind of Pete, semiconductors.
Yeah, that's the kiddie. So anyway, so that one, you know, maybe, I mean, that's an interesting space, obviously. And I mean, with the unbelievable things that I heard last night, that I'm so going to get whacked. President Z is saying that within his reign of being the president of China, he wants to reunify Taiwan with China, and apparently he's told his military to be ready to take it if you need to, but I don't think he wants to go down the military route. But I think he said 2028, or it might have been 2030. But you just think that's just horrendous, really, isn't it? I mean, poor old Taiwan really wouldn't have a chance. So, yeah, horrendous situation. But it makes you think chip makers and anything to do with chips, because obviously Taiwan is a massive producer. Taiwan Semiconductor, massive producer of chippy stuff. So a lot of it needs to be reshored and brought back to the Western countries, because there's a real risk that if Taiwan goes, you ain't going to get your chips. So, yeah, all bit of a nightmare, really.
Okay. Michael, have you got any exposure? Sorry, you put your hand up. Go for it.
I've got a comment about chips.
Go on, then. Not ketchup, yeah? Is that what it is? Vinegar?
So my comment is actually, I read an article a couple of weeks ago from about UBS saying that there is going to be a glut of chips in 3 to 6 months' time, and that this is all going to turn on its head, and that there's going to be a glut of new cars. We know it's going to happen. We just don't know when it is. And that used car prices are starting to come down. So all of these things go in cycles. I thought that was relevant, really.
No, I think that's a good point. You always get the extremes. One saying there's going to be, you know, there's going to be a surplus, and one saying there's going to be a shortage. So it's good to have that sort of dynamic and exposure. Pete, you spoke about IPOs being absolutely terrible, and around this time last year, I haven't got the exact dates, but it IPO'd, right? So sorry, January 2021. Is that the right time? No, I've got the wrong date. Anyway, so IPO, it was called The Hut Group, THG, right? Yeah. IPO'd at £5 per share, market cap, 5.4 billion. Yeah, £5 raised to £8, right? Just over £8 in January 2021. Got a very charismatic CEO and co-founder called Matthew Moulding. Most of the 60 to 90% of the time you see him, he's got no shirt on, right? Look at me, I've got muscles, sort of thing, right? CEO, he's always on holiday somewhere. The shares have been absolutely spanked. And I put a tweet out about this on the 30th of September when I said, enough is enough. Done my analysis of the shares. Everyone hates it. Everyone's kicking it. Everyone's saying the end is nigh. This guy's a crook, a fraud, and all the rest of it. And anyone who's buying this stock is absolutely stupid. So that's what I did, because I'm stupid. So I bought some on the 30th of September, done my analysis. I felt the shares had been unduly battered. Matthew Moulding, had rejected a bid of £1.70 per share in May of this year. Share prices carried on tanking. lots of different sentiment, lots of stuff going on. Everything that's could be negative and thrown at this stock has happened. All the e-commerce stocks, this is an e-commerce platform that helps with branding and all the rest of it. And it's got other bits and pieces to its armory. Just tanked from £8 in January of 2021 to in May rejecting a bid at £1.70 to recently towards 35 pence. So I jumped in front of the bus, going at speed, going off the tracks, and bought at 37 pence on the 30th of September with a view that some of the parts was £1.80. So I had my margin of safety there, yeah, that this is going to be all right. You know, it's five times the value of what the shares are right now. I'll take two or three times more than that. I'll be fine. SoftBank, one of the major cornerstone investors, decided at the weekend to go, we're out. We're going to get rid of all that we've got of this stock and sold it back to the co-founder and Qatar Sovereign Wealth Fund for 39 pence, Pete and Michael. And they took a £450 million write-off. So I'm thinking, my sum of the parts is £1.80. These guys are selling it at 39p and going, we're out of town, guys. We're out. And I'm going, oh, my lordy. Tuesday, the shares are looking at it and people are going, well, therefore, if he's buying this, therefore, the share price is going to be going up, isn't it? So share price spiked. It's gone. And I thought, I don't quite understand what's going on here. If he's rejected 170, SoftBank selling out at 39 pence. The shares are now at 53 pence, 52 pence. I just took vast majority of my investment out, trimmed it significantly at 52 pence.
So you made a good profit on that bid.
I put a load of money in it because I thought I'd got five times my money coming forward, at least three times money. So I put a load of money in this stock. Took all my money out and some more, at 52 pence. That was yesterday. So I've only had it less than three weeks, really, of trading time. Today, the share price went up a further 16% to 58.5 pence. People are talking about this MBO, so management buyout. So if it comes off, it'll be my 52nd takeover in 8 years. But I'm not sure what the level will be if the takeover happens. So a management buyout happens with Qatar taking it off the table, or if it happens at all. This guy is an accountant strategist by trade historically. So he's not going to be lumping a massive premium on this. If it comes out at 64 pence, 74 pence, that'll be 100% return on all my investment in its entirety. Brilliant. But it's a completely high risk play. And I only took it because I saw the value at £1.80, but my value was completely ridden and pooed over by SoftBank selling out at 39 pence. So I haven't got a Scooby-Doo what the value is now because I've just been told that I'm an idiot by SoftBank.
I mean, that's amazing, isn't it? Because you would think that SoftBank would have a pretty good idea what it was worth, wouldn't you?
They're just like, we're getting out. We don't care at what price we're getting out. £450 million write-off in the space of a year and a bit. Staggering.
Makes you wonder if they really know what they're doing, doesn't it? Do you know what I mean? It seems bizarre.
Well, they're one of the biggest ones out there, mate.
I know.
So there you go. So I just wanted to share that one. The other I wanted to share as well is I'm concerned that I'm getting lots and lots of DMs and lots of other people are talking about their investment getting hit and that getting hit and all the rest of it. And it's been a really difficult market since last September. Just something to share with you, ladies and gents out there. It is really difficult right now. But as Michael pointed out, we've all got to take the rough with the smooth. And when we're doing well, we've got to just take that in kind. And when we're not doing so well, we've got to be patient and the market will recover and be okay. There are several managers out there, including Kathy Cook. Is that right, Pete?
No, Kathy
Woods. And this is the time of night now. My brain just goes completely off charts, people. So completely apologize for me. I'm trying to keep too much information in my head here. Right. So this is a comedian. Okay. ARK Innovation Fund is down 70%. Right? BlackRock Throgmorton Trust is down 46% year to date. Another good fund manager. Smiths, right? Fundsmith, Scottish Mortgage, Smithson down 44% is Smithson. SNT is down 44.5%. Berkshire Hathaway, boring, calm, stable, buys quality, down 2.13%. So quality is still holding well there. Now, I interviewed, and you guys have got to go and listen to this. Please, please, please do so. An absolutely phenomenal interview with Stephen Kelly, the former ex-Oracle guy, serial entrepreneur, ex-CEO of Chaudience, Micro Focus, and Sage. Did an interview with him on the Investing Matters podcast. Absolutely smashed it and talked about how to find quality stocks, how to find quality managers, how to invest alongside people who are going to grow a business. So please visit that on the Investing Matters account, and also ask for it on your various platforms for the Investing Matters podcast. That's what I wanted to share with people today.
Pete, where do people find that Investing Matters? How do they get to it?
Anchor FM or my Twitter account or Investing Matters on Twitter. And that's at INV Matt Podcast, Investing Matters. Type that into Twitter and find it.
It's on YouTube, isn't it?
YouTube as well, under the London Southeast branding.
So they have YouTube. They have to look under London Southeast. Yeah.
Or just find them via my account. You find them all under my account as well. Just Brilliant. Type in Stephen Kelly. And he can be found at S. Kelly CEO. Just go for one.
What I think of it, can everyone who's listening please do us a massive favour, right? Even if you don't, listen to the podcast using YouTube or watch it using YouTube or whatever, can you please go on there and just follow, the Conkers 3 account? Is that right, Pete?
Yeah.
Follow the Conkers 3 account where we put our YouTube video, because we need to get those numbers, the number of subscribers, I think it's called, but you don't have to pay anything. We need to get the number of subscribers up to 1,000, and then YouTube will help us promote the videos and stuff we do. So if you can do us a favour, please, that would be fantastic. Thank you.
Brilliant, brilliant. Now, Michael, you've been an absolutely fantastic guest. We've been on here for nearly 70 minutes. Is there any parting words you want to share to people to inspire them regarding the investing journey that you've had, in a sense of, you know, stick with it or whatever you want to say?
So I think investing is a bit Marmite. Either you love it or hate it. Some people just are never going to be interested. Other people have got a passion for it. I think anyone watching this podcast has probably got a passion. I've been through all the problems that you talk about. I bought oil companies and resource companies a long time ago, thinking, oh, I'm going to make a fast buck. I've got it out of my system now. It's all part of the process, but it's part of the process.
You're spot on.
You know, spot on. And accept that's just part of the journey to getting where you go. And each investment is a learning curve. Good, bad, indifferent. You probably learn more from the ones that go wrong than go right. I do think a lot of people make things very difficult in investing, and you can certainly make things more simple. I think you must have noticed I rule out sectors of the market. I don't invest in IPOs. But the vast majority go wrong if you buy into an IPO. Why would you sell your company that you spent a long time building up cheaply? Why would you do that? I wouldn't. So when you buy not into an IPO, that is involved. I know I miss out on a couple of opportunities where it's a massively good idea and they need capital, but it makes my life more simple. Avoiding these big losses will do wonders for your portfolio.
Spot on.
One other thing I wanted to add about speaking to management. There's two things. One, it's far more interesting than reading RNSs, and it sticks in my head more when they tell me what's going on in a company. And they tell you, and say, what do I look out for? What's going on? You get it easily. And the other reason is I want to know what they're like. Do I trust this guy? what do I think of him? Because you are giving them your money to look after. So that is an important part of my process and reason for speaking to management.
Whether you trust that guy or that lady, yeah?
You're right, yeah. Of course.
Cool. Pete, no, that's brilliant. Absolutely spot on, Michael. And I think it's really important that what you touched on there, there is no one size fits all. Your strategy is not for everybody. Pete's strategy is not for everybody. My way of going about it is not for everybody. We should all find our own way. And this is exactly what I'm saying about finding our own stocks, not listening to anybody. You know, there's people going in my DM saying, it's really frustrating me, Pete, that you sometimes put a tweet out that says, I bought this new holding today, but you don't tell me what it is. Tell me what it is so I can make my own mind up. I'm like, no, you go and find your own stock. You know, I'm not here to tell you what's a good idea on open Twitter. Because if my good idea is absolutely pants and tanks 50% like IOG, you're going to say, I got that idea from Conkers. It's an absolute loon. But when it goes well, you're not going to come back and say, I got that idea from Conkers. You're not going to say it's your idea. So go and find your own ideas. And everyone should do their own research. Yeah. So I share my research on here regarding certain stocks that I think are a good idea or a research idea. And then my own stuff, I keep to myself. And then I put I will put out my contract notes, Michael, right? Why doesn't anybody else put the contract notes out? The buys, the sells, the ads, and so on and so forth. Oh, I've exited this, I've bought that, I've done that. There's no transparency. And there's people now walking away from Twitter and saying, I'm done with Twitter because of it's getting vile. Yeah? It doesn't need to be like that. You know, share the good, the bad, and the indifference. You know, I think we'll make it such a better place because people are getting anxious, they're stressed, they're losing money. And I think the best way to do it is to be kind to everybody. And the best way to do it is not to say to somebody, ramp, 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 ramp. And then when it goes wrong, disappear. Pete, what do you want to close with, mate?
All I want to say is thank you, Michael. You've been a brilliant guest. I've really enjoyed chatting to you. I always enjoy having a chat with you ever since we first met. And I'm going to see you down the pub as soon as my health issues are fixed. And really looking forward to it. And thank you for coming and joining us. Brilliant.
You smashed it, Michael. Thank you for coming on, mate.
Well, can I just say thank you both as well. When I came to my first Mellow in London, I met you individually and you were both very kind. Peter Higgins, you even asked to interview me, which I was a bit shocked about. Thanks for your support too. I think for me, you know, investing can be quite lonely. And up until I came to Mellow, I was basically investing on my own. And you learn so much from just talking to other investors, hearing what they do. We all invest in our individual way according to our personality and our experiences. But you learn from everyone. And that's great. Thank you.
Thank you. Cheers, mate. Very, very much. Ladies and gents, that's a wrap from us. We've done 70-odd minutes. At this time, I always say to you all, look out for others in your community. Look after yourselves. Be kind. Be charitable. Things are getting hard now, and we're getting towards that season, you know, SAD season, when it's dark outside by 4 or 5 o'clock, depending on where you are in the UK, and it's quite lonely. So if you can, reach out for somebody that you know, send them some love. Make a call, send them a WhatsApp, and just generally just do what you can for the local charities because they're all struggling. Okay, until we see you in 2 weeks' time, take care, God bless, and keep the feedback coming because we're loving what we're hearing. And as long as we keep doing what we're doing, hopefully we're doing it right. Take care, God bless. Bye-bye for now.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.